Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are on the eve of the French Open, the second Grand Slam tournament of 2016. Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport fame is in Paris, awaiting the start of the tournament. Myself, David Law, I am not. I work for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport. Neither one of those I'm working for over the next couple of weeks. I'm just going to be standing in an office of which I can hit all four walls at the same time. It's so small, it has no windows. I can't see the beautiful Philippe Chatrier court from where I'm sitting unless I turn my TV on. I've never been to the French Open, but Catherine Whittaker is going to tell me all about how wonderful it is. We're going to be talking about the French Open generally, what it is like to be there, because Catherine is there, she knows. We're going to be talking about the draws, going through them in detail, having a look at the brackets, as the Americans call them, and trying to work out who we think is going to end up where. We'll have predictions, competitions that will be on Twitter over the next couple of days for the tournament in general and daily ones as well as we work our way through the next couple of weeks. And Catherine Whittaker, we're going to be hearing from the man who helped to mastermind the downfall of Novak Djokovic last year. That's Magnus Norman, who's coach to Stan Wawrinka, of course. Spoke to him earlier in the year about how you beat Novak Djokovic, because he knows. We are sponsored, Catherine Whittaker, for our French Open preview by Racquet Magazine, which is a new quarterly print magazine. Print only. Who'd have thought you'd still get print-only magazines? Well, this is one. It is a tennis one. It is one that you will not want to miss if you love tennis. And we're going to have a chat about that in the next half an hour or so as well. Catherine Whittaker, what is it like? Come on, tell me. Let me know what Paris is like, given that I don't get to go.
Gosh, you're asking me to sum up the whole of Paris. Well, it's just so wonderfully Parisian, if that's not a completely facile comment to make. I mean, everything conforms to all the wonderful stereotypes of Paris. You know, I saw a slightly elderly gentleman with a big moustache wearing a beret cycling down the road on his bicycle earlier, and it was just the most wonderful sight. I felt like I was looking at a classic French painting. It's a wonderful place. It's not necessarily somewhere that I'd want to live. It's like a beautiful painting that I like to admire, you know, objectively. I don't necessarily see it as the most livable city. I know lots of people would absolutely love to live in Paris. That's just a personal preference, but it is a wonderful place to be.
And I mentioned, Catherine, that, you know, to me, this is one of the great tournaments to have followed. I'll be talking later in the show about how much this tournament has meant to me from afar. I've never actually managed to go to Roland Garros ever before. What is it like? What is Roland Garros like? For those people that haven't had the opportunity to go, you're there. What's it like?
Well, there's 2 points here. Generally, I mean, I only actually first came here for the first time 2 years ago, and it really, really differed from my expectations. I actually think it doesn't come across brilliantly on the TV. I think atmosphere-wise, it comes across very well. But visually, you know, from a purely aesthetic point of view, it doesn't come across brilliantly. The stadia are very concrete. I think it comes across as very harsh, concrete, grey, just not aesthetically pleasing. And actually, yes, that is the case. The stadia are not things of beauty. But the site in general, they've almost overcompensated for that with the rest of the site and the public areas. There's lots of greenery and flora, and all of the restaurants are really nicely done with nice canopies, and it's all just really, really pleasant. And as soon as, yes, the Philippe Chatrier Court from the exterior, it is not a thing of beauty. But once you get inside it, it becomes a thing of beauty. It does create incredible atmosphere. I should point out that there are some things that are significantly different this year. A large portion of the site, and it is not a huge site compared to the other Grand Slams, it's on a far smaller area of land. A quite big portion of the site is suddenly just a hole in the ground where they're building a new stadium, presumably one that is sort of amphitheatre, like dug into the ground. It seems to be quite trendy with tennis stadia at the moment. And unfortunately, that cavity in the ground is where my favourite lunch vendor used to be. So my delightful quiches that I used to get for lunch every day are no more. And I don't know whether the quiche vendor has relocated. I appeal for news about the quiche vendor, because it's a real detriment to my time at Roland Garros if I can't get my daily quiche.
Right. Okay. Well, when I asked that question, I really didn't expect the word quiche to come into the conversation. Now, you're banging on about how great the food is there, Catherine. The only thing is, though, do you have to remortgage your house or sell your car in order to get this quiche?
Actually, no. I mean, obviously, it's been a year since I've had the blimmin' quiche, because I couldn't track any down today, so I can't remember vividly. No, I think it's actually a reason. I mean, I have positive memories of this quiche in every respect, as you can tell, is dominating my thoughts at the moment. But it is one of the many sort of little things that all add up that this Grand Slam has going for it. The fact that there's not only, you know, burger chips and hot dogs available in the public areas. Now, look, I love all of those three things dearly, very dearly. But they lose their joy if you're having to have them for every or most meal. Whereas here, this Grand Slam, you can have burger chips and hot dog. I mean, they won't give you vinegar on your chips. I mean, they look at you quizzically if you even ask for vinegar on your chips. I've learnt not to. But anyway.
Anybody outside of the UK looks at people quizzically if they have vinegar on chips. Anyway, come on.
I know, they just don't understand. We're the enlightened ones, they're not. Anyway, it's great not to have a burger and or chips sometimes. And Roland Garros is great for that. You know, there's salad bars and quiches, and it's all coming back to the quiche, isn't it? I can't stop thinking about this quiche absence in my life.
Well, I love the old burgers and chips, so every meal's fine by me. Roland Garros is a place that I would love to go on one level, because I've sort of got this romantic view of it, because I think part of that is built up. I mean, it's all TV based for me, but and listening on the radio, and the reason for both of those things is partly because of the acoustics of the place. It's always seemed to me on that Philippe Chatrier court that if somebody really hits the ball out of the centre of the strings of the racket and hits it cleanly and hard, it sounds as though it's being hit even harder than it actually is. There's like a thunderclap. There's this reverb that goes around the stadium like an echo, and it gives you a shudder when somebody really catches the ball well. Is that how it feels when you're in there?
Yes, it is. It's something that you can't quite put your finger on, although you have just put your finger on it. It is a bit special. And it makes me wonder whether it's something that I'd be amazed if it's something that the architects intended when they design it. Maybe it is. Maybe I underestimate the work of the architects. I just don't know. Maybe it's just a wonderfully happy accident. But yes, there is something special about the sound of the ball being struck, particularly, you know, when it's being struck by Nadal, for example, when you also get the echo of his grunt as he hits it. You know, the strain and the effort, and it just all is amplified somehow, and it does create a quite special atmosphere.
Yeah, I'm sure. The other reason that the French Open is so special to me, I think, is because, you know how when you're growing up, you can have an album or a song or something that you feel as though is your soundtrack to your life growing up? Does that make any sense?
It does, yeah. I won't name any albums because none of them will reflect well on me. But yes, in principle, I understand.
Well, my album was the French Open. And the reason I say that is because if I go all the way back to 1990, when I was just 16 and I was failing my first set of exams, which would have been my GCSEs. And one of the reasons for that is because I was watching tennis all day in May of 1990. And I was watching Andre Agassi go to the final. It's the first time I'd ever seen the guy play tennis on the TV live. I'd seen little clips of him, but we didn't get live coverage of him. He'd never played Wimbledon at that point, of course. I'm trying to remember, what was the first year that Andre Agassi played Wimbledon? It would have been the year after, 1991, when he appeared in his all-white outfit, like they have now, of course. Back then, you could wear a little bit of colour. But at the French Open in 1990, he came out in that purple outfit with the bleach blonde hair, you know, which we now have discovered, thanks to his autobiography, was a wig. And he was beaten in the final by Andrés Gómez, who was well into his 30s. An amazing story. And Catherine Whittaker, I promptly went out and bought the closest thing I could find to the Andre Agassi outfit to wear.
Did you buy the wig? I suppose at the time you didn't know it was a wig.
No, I didn't buy the wig. I tell you, a 6'7", very, very white human being like myself with freckles wearing the Andre Agassi outfit doesn't really work, I have to say. Anyway, the next year he went to the final and played Jim Courier. Courier beat him in the final there. And then in 92, I was just watching all the time. It was when I failed my A-levels after having failed my GCSEs before then, 2 years earlier. And it was Courier again beating Peter Korda in the final. Crikey, I can name every single year of that French Open run of about 6 years where I did as little work as I possibly could and watched tennis all day in the afternoons.
So Andrés Gómez and Jim Courier's success was your great failure.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have a certain, without bragging, I mean, I have a certain degree of sympathy without having actually failed my exams. It was great that study leave always used to fall during the French Open. All of my study leave memories are of, I just did all of my revision in front of French Open coverage. And as women are famously better multitaskers than men, which I realise is a sweeping generalisation, but as somebody who has tried to hold down a conversation with you, David, whilst you're also trying to type a message on your phone, I can vouch for your slightly underpowered multitasking skills. Perhaps that's where I succeeded and you failed.
Sorry, I'm just writing a message at the moment. Now, what we're talking about... tennis.
It's because you're dedicated to the task at hand, David. That's what it is. That's how you should have defended yourself.
That's right. No, it's because I'm trying to spin those plates. Now, even if I can't keep them all in the air and they go crash into the ground, into smithereens. Anyway, I mentioned Catherine. I mean, that was the birth of my love for tennis, really. It was that era. It's what made me want to work in tennis. And I would say that as a result of that, it wasn't just a misspent youth when I was failing all of those exams, Catherine Whittaker. That was work in progress, wasn't it? You know, you've got to get behind me here. You may have been 5 years old at the time, but get behind me.
Yeah, you're a really bad example to any youth that might be listening. Fail your exams, kids, in order to watch tennis on the telly, and one day you too could be a BBC broadcaster.
Yeah, that's right. Now, on the subject of love in tennis, we mentioned that this preview edition of the tennis podcast of the French Open is sponsored by Racquet Magazine, which is a new quarterly print publication that, in their words, does justice to the game we love, from tennis's buccaneering past to its modern global culture. And actually, when you look at the Kickstarter page that Racquet Magazine has, which is trying to help fund this print edition of a magazine, it is pretty inspiring to think about that, because I mean, my early formative years were of reading tennis magazines every month, and that, you know, there are so few of them around now, and it really is a breath of fresh air that Caitlin Thompson and her fellow collaborators are getting together to produce a proper tennis magazine every quarter of the year. And I tell you, I'm really looking forward to seeing that, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I like the idea of it being quarterly. I like the idea of having a coffee table tennis book. I like that. It doesn't necessarily land on your doormat and feel, oh my gosh, I have to read it instantly in order to find out about what's going on in the tennis world, like it was with my brother's subscription to Serve and Volley magazine in the early 90s. You know, I like the idea of a coffee table tennis magazine that I can browse and, you know, get lost in every now and then. I think it's a really good idea. I think there is a place for a purely print publication, even in a digital age. It's just finding the right medium for it. And I think this sounds quite exciting, really.
It does. So if you want to find out about it, Racquet Magazines, go and look on Google. You'll find it quickly enough. They're on Twitter as well. And as I mentioned, they've got a Kickstarter going that they're trying to raise enough money to put the print run of this magazine together. And hopefully it'll be hitting your doormat very soon because they do ship globally. Now, Catherine Whittaker, the draw for the French Open has been done earlier today. And boy, it is exciting, isn't it? We had a student, Matt, live tweeting it at Tennis Podcast. I'll tell you, that guy can type. He wasn't multitasking. He was just doing the job in hand. I mean, it's a good job you didn't get me doing that. I'd have had about four other conversations on the go at the same time. But he was whacking all the various permutations of the draw out on Twitter. And it has, on the men's side, the most significant bit, of course, Roger Federer, we found out yesterday, isn't going to play. That extraordinary run of 65 Grand Slam tournaments in a row has come to the end, which gave birth to the hashtag, which I have to say we developed on at Tennis Podcast Twitter, which was when Federer last missed a slam, what was happening, 1999. And, of course, so he's gone. And so that leaves the four seeds and Nadal in those top four seeds, but he's been drawn into the same half as Djokovic.
Well, that was what everyone was waiting with bated breath to see, wasn't it? Where Nadal would be drawn, I think. He was the, you know, even as the number four seed, he was the floater, if you like. He was the one that everybody was hoping to avoid. He was certainly, I would imagine, the one that Andy Murray was hoping to avoid. The only man in the draw, of course, guaranteed not to meet Novak Djokovic until the final. Some people are looking at Murray's draw differently. I think it's a great draw, personally. I know there's the potential to meet Nishikori and then Wawrinka, and I know Kyrgios is lurking in there as well. But for me, it's crucial that he's not in Nadal's half. I think, even though for me, and lots of people see it differently, I would have Murray as the favourite going into a match with Nadal, even at the French Open. I think what Murray wouldn't want, even if he would come through that match, it would almost certainly be a long marathon, and you don't want to go into any final, let alone a probable one with Novak Djokovic, having just played a 4 or 5 set marathon with Rafael Nadal. So for Murray, I see it as very, very positive. Honestly, for Djokovic, I think the draw is least relevant. I think if that meeting with Nadal does happen, I think Djokovic will be a heavy, heavy favourite. I almost see it as, well, not almost, I do see it as more significant for Murray than for Djokovic, that draw.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. I'm not completely sure that I'm not sure I agree with you that Murray's the favourite against Nadal on clay at the French Open.
No, I know. I know that's not necessarily consensus. I feel that way. I know lots feel differently. I think it is dividing opinion a bit. For me, Murray is the second favourite for this title. I do feel strongly about that, but I also accept that it's not consensus feeling by any means.
I think that is what ultimately the bookies have just about marginally made Murray the second favourite, I think, after the draw. Because Nadal, if we just take him first, he has been put in a really tough section because he's potentially looking at Fabio Fognini in the third round, a man who's beaten him at slams before. Dominic Thiem, maybe, last 16.
Well, just quickly on that subject, I know someone tweeted us about it today and I completely agree. What is he doing playing this week? I mean, that's what he's too high ranked to be. I mean, yes, I know Wawrinka's played this week, but he's had a shocker of a clay court season. He desperately needed to get some wins, and it's his home tournament in Geneva. I think that's a slightly different kettle of fish. Dominic Thiem is going to come into the French Open again, firing on fewer cylinders than he needs to. I would love to be talking about Dominic Thiem as a potential outsider for this French Open, and I'm not thinking that way, and it's scheduling again. He needs to sort it out because I want to be talking about him in that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. But I have to say, I think I reckon he's probably going to end up against Alexander Zverev in the third round, Dominic Thiem, because I think Kevin Anderson, who's in Zverev's section, Anderson is the seeded player there. I don't see him getting through. He's been injured badly. Clay isn't his best service. So I think Team Zverev is going to be a fascinating third round match, most likely. And whoever comes through that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I think really could give Nadal a run for his money. I see Nadal taking out Fanini. And just having seen Thiem, I think it was against, Thiem against Nadal a few weeks ago, and also against Djokovic. Even though I share your thoughts about the canister being a little bit empty, relatively speaking, to use Roger Federer's phrase of a few weeks back, I think that we'll see Thiem perform really well. And most likely Nadal will take him out just about.
I think you're probably right, but I still don't think we'll be seeing the full potential of Dominic Thiem. And I feel like I'm banging on about it too much, but I'm finding it very frustrating because as much as he's coming on, that just makes it all the more frustrating. The more he reveals his potential, the more we realise how good he could be if he just sorts out what I see as a very resolvable and very obvious issue. You know, he has the schedule of a top 30, top 40 player, but he's actually homing in on the top 10 now. And I think he needs to sort it out a bit. I think he probably will get there, I agree. And I think he'll play well, but I think he'll not quite have enough and he'll run out of steam. And I think that's a shame.
Yeah. Share your thoughts there. So, looking at Djokovic's draw, Yusen Lu in the first round, then Darcy or Ilan from Turkey in the second round. I mean, this is not a bad draw, is it? Del Bonis has been playing very well recently from Argentina. Still can't see him causing Djokovic too many problems in the third round. And then fourth round, most likely, is going to be Bautista Agut. I mean, that is just about as good as you could get.
Or Borna Coric, David.
Yeah, well, he is in that section, I agree, but when they faced each other...
I know he's not done much of late, but I do think he's worth a mention in that section.
Yeah, no, okay, I take that point. Actually, is it the fourth round? No, it would be fourth round, that section that Bautista Agut is seeded, at least, to play Djokovic. Look, whichever way you slice it up, that is a good section to be in, with a quarterfinal against most likely either Ferrer or Burdick. I mean, I'm telling you, Djokovic would have signed for that.
Oh, crikey, yeah. I mean, that is basically a dream for Djokovic, that first section. I mean, I know I talked in our last podcast about potentially foreseeing, you know, an early upset, but an early wobble, perhaps, caused by a combination of somebody having the day of their life and, you know, doubts or stress creeping into Novak Djokovic, you know, a Jiří Veselý type day, or a Gilles Simon in Australia. And not sure I see anybody in that section of the draw that can do that. But then, you know, no one would ever have picked out Jiří Veselý. So never say never. But I think from that perspective, that early portion of the draw is pretty sweet for Djokovic.
Yeah, it is. Looking at the other side of it, I mean, so let's just wrap up that top section. We reckon that it is going to be that Nadal Djokovic semi, do you think?
We do. Yep, I certainly do. I haven't heard anybody predicting that not to happen yet. I'm sure there are people out there. It takes all sorts, but I haven't heard it in any mainstream tennis media. I think that will happen. I think I am perhaps on the more pessimistic Nadal side of things. I fear that could be quite one-sided in favour of Djokovic. I'd like to be proven wrong. I'd like to see that be a match, the match it deserves to be on paper. And I think it could be decent. I think it would be closer than last year. I fear it wouldn't be the guts and gore battle that you want when you see those two play. I mean, I would have Djokovic as the heavy favourite going into that.
I think I will just hold fire, frankly, until we see how Nadal looks throughout the run-up to that match, if they do face each other.
I mean, yes, but you don't know. Until you see him play Djokovic, I just don't think you know how he's playing.
Hold on a minute. Let's just say that Nadal finds the Nadal of old at Roland Garros, right? Let's not forget how great this man is. He's won 9 of these things. Djokovic hasn't won any. No, he's won 9 of them. If he finds that form from within himself, it's going to be at the very least close.
Yeah, but at some point he's not going to find that Nadal anymore. I'm not counting him out at all. I think there is a chance that could happen. There is definitely a chance that could happen. But this is exactly the same thing as people were saying last year. And let's remember what happened last year.
He wasn't playing as well last year as he is now.
Yeah, he's playing better. Djokovic is also playing a bit better, I think. I think the matchup against Djokovic is the benchmark, and I think he will still come up quite short against Djokovic. That's my feeling. I think he's going to look very impressive in the early rounds. I think he is much improved in those matches. I just think still against that top level benchmark, he is still quite short. Of course, he might find something. Of course he can. It's Roland Garros. It's Nadal. It could happen. I just don't predict it will happen.
It's going to be interesting. Very, very interesting. The other side of the draw, Andy Murray, we've already said, he's a pretty heavy favourite to come through that section certainly into the quarterfinals, I would have thought. It's not a bad run until then. There's Ivo Karlovic in there for a big server in the third round. There's John Isner maybe in the round after that. So two of the biggest servers in the game. And then most likely it's either Nishikori or Kyrgios. And that is a really tough quarterfinal, isn't it?
It is, yes. Again, he'll be the strong favourite going into either matchup, particularly against Kyrgios. I think Nishikori is a danger because that could be long and draining. And even if he were to make it through, it's the sort of match that could damage his chances for the rest of the tournament. I mean, Kyrgios, even if it goes long, it's rarely draining at the very least. I certainly would look forward to either of those matches with heavy anticipation. I think they're mouth-watering, but I think Murray would take care of either of them. Really, I have a real confidence in Murray on clay. I think he has this confidence in himself on clay. I think something has happened. Beating Novak Djokovic, it must be nourishment for the tennis soul. I think it just gives him a zen-like quality. If you know you can beat Novak Djokovic, then, you know, anything else is easy, isn't it?
I would actually agree that he will get through to the semi-finals. I do think he will find his way past whichever one of those two that it is. As well as Kei Nishikori's playing, I think that Murray physically can outlast Nishikori, and I think he would do that. Looking at the semi-final opponent that he would be scheduled to meet, according to the seedings, it would be the defending champion Stan Wawrinka. We just don't know which Wawrinka we're going to end up seeing, really, do we? He has had that run to the final in Geneva. I think, as you said, he really needed that because of what's been going on with his game of late. If they were to face, well, it just depends on what sort of form Wawrinka's in, because he has the ability to knock Murray off the court. He's done it before.
Well, he has the ability to knock anybody off the court. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? At his best, he's pretty much the favourite for this title. He makes our job impossible, Wawrinka, because it's impossible, really, to speculate about him. I mean, yes, he's had a pretty woeful clay court season this year, barring Geneva. He's pulling it out of the bag at the very last moment. But actually, he had a not great clay court season last year. I know he had the run in Rome, but I remember vividly in Monte Carlo watching him against Grigor Dimitrov in, I think, the quarterfinals. In fact, no, I think the third round in Monte Carlo. And I cannot describe how bad he was. You can go back through the archive, and I think I remember talking to you about it on the podcast, David, or talking about it on the podcast last week. He was horrendous. I mean, it was sort of like, is a top-level tennis player really playing this badly? And there were a couple of other performances in the clay court season that didn't meet those lows, but they certainly didn't give any indication that this was a player that was going to go on to win the French Open. So I almost think it's meaningless. And the fact that he's had this run in Geneva this week does suggest that maybe he's timed it perfectly again. And for me, he really is a contender. I mean, he's also a contender to lose really early in spectacular fashion. But he also is very much a contender for the title again.
Right then, Catherine. So it sounds to me as though we're both basically got the same semi-final lineup. We've got Djokovic, Nadal. We've got Wawrinka, Murray. Who's going to be in the final? Who's going to win it?
Djokovic, Murray final. I'm so original, aren't I? Djokovic, Murray final. I've got Djokovic winning it. There is a part of me, quite a strong part, deep in my gut, that is actually saying Murray. I do have quite a strong feeling for Murray. But because of how bad I am in predictions, and because of my track record of being unable to distinguish rational rational logic from, you know, head over heart, all of that stuff, I'm going with reason, and you just can't not predict Novak Djokovic to win anything at the moment. So I'm playing it a little bit safe on this one, but I do think in that final that I feel strongly will happen, Murray will have a chance. I just think Djokovic is the favourite.
Well, he would certainly have a chance. I think we're probably going to get that final as well. I still, you know, I don't say it with a massive degree of conviction, because I think the two guys that could end up facing those two, in Nadal and Wawrinka, they could turn that script on its head, depending on what sort of form they're in. But I'd go with Djokovic against Murray. I think Djokovic will win the title this year. I've said that for the last couple of weeks. That's how I think things are going to unfold. The women's draw, we now have Serena Williams at the very top of it. And we have Serena in the same quarter as Victoria Azarenka, which is rough on both of them, really, isn't it?
Brilliant for the rest of the draw, though. I mean, they would have all have been rubbing their hands together. The rest of the draw just became even more open. There were two players, I think, that were nailed on as strong favourites, and everybody else was had some form of question mark over them. I mean, yes, there's some question mark with Victoria Azarenka's health, but apart from that, I think this is the most wonderful news for every other person in the draw, apart from people that they're each scheduled to meet before that quarterfinal meeting. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be explosive if it happens. I think hearing Azarenka in press today, she wasn't playing down expectations, but she certainly wasn't playing them up either. I do think, whether in reality or just in her mind, the back injury is definitely still there. It's still a presence for her, Azarenka. But yeah, it's certainly going to make it exciting, and it's made an open. It's weird. It's in some ways made it less open, because you just think, well, whoever wins that match is surely going to come on and win the tournament. But then it just leaves the other three quarters of the draw so open, even more open than it was before.
Particularly, Catherine. The bottom half of the draw, because, I mean, all the big names, the really big names, the majority of them anyway, feel as if they're in that top half of the draw, because you've got Williams and Azarenka as a quarterfinal, most likely, or at least on paper anyway. You've then got Kerber in the other quarter in that top section of the draw. You've got Venus Williams in there. You've got Madison Keys, who's the informed player in that section. On the other half, you've got players that are really struggling for form, like Roberta Vinci, who's had such a tough time. Petra Kvitova hasn't been feeling too well. Muguruza, I think, and Halep are the players that I see coming through and actually meeting ultimately in the semis, I think, in that bottom half of the draw. What do you think?
I think so too. I've got Halep in the final. I think this is, today's gone well for her. The draw has gone very well for her. But then, you know, we know she doesn't necessarily deal with pressure brilliantly, or she's at least, you know, it's been a journey for her coming to terms with pressure. So, you know, that could work either way. I would also mention Kuznetsova in that portion of the draw. I mean, it is laid out really well for her. She's up back inside the top 15. She's playing really good tennis. I'll tell you what, nobody wants to meet Svetlana Kuznetsova. Alongside those two names, Muguruza and Halep, I would put Kuznetsova in that bracket as well as a certainly a potential semi-finalist for sure.
It's going to be fascinating. It is going to be fascinating. I'm going to go Muguruza against Serena Williams in the final. It's the first chance I've had to really look at the draw, and just seeing it now, that's what stands out for me. I think Muguruza on her day is the closest thing to Serena Williams in terms of power on a clay court. So that's what I'm going for. And ultimately Serena to win the title. Who's winning it, Catherine?
Oh, I've gone for Serena. I've played it so safe against all of my better instincts to be a foolish predictor. I just think in a time of such uncertainty in women's tennis, there is only really one certainty, or one close to certainty, or one person you can never count out, and that's Serena Williams. And that's sort of the strongest thing you have to go on. So Serena Williams.
Okay. Catherine, just before we sign off for this preview edition, the tournament starts on Sunday. Now, I ran one of my favourite polls on Tennis Podcast. I've been writing polls every 5 minutes the last few days. You're probably best off staying away from the Tennis Podcast Twitter account at the moment, Catherine, because I know this just drives you up the wall. But anyway, here's one that I'm going to tell you about, which is, should tournaments, Grand Slams, start on a Sunday or a Monday? Because really, the French Open is the only one that does the Sunday. Well, what do you think?
I absolutely see all the logic. It's an extra day of, you know, weekend, you know, spectators, weekend TV, etc., etc. I just feel like Monday's the start of the week. Let's start on a Monday. And I know that's not a particularly coherent argument. It just feels a little bit wrong. And that's all I've got, just it feeling a little bit wrong. I know that's not the strongest argument in the world, but if I was president of the universe, I would probably have a Monday start. But in full recognition of all of the positives that come with a Sunday start. I don't feel quite strongly about it enough to get on any kind of high horse. But if I were in charge, I'd probably make it a Monday start.
I would go Monday as well. Our tennis podcast listeners have gone 54% from Monday start, 46% for a Sunday. I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I do wonder what else you'd do if you were the master of the universe. But anyway, we'll get on to
quiches.
That in a separate tennis podcast in
quiches
the future.
For everyone.
Yeah, so that'll be a tennis podcast for the future. Catherine Whittaker, master of the universe. Anyway, we mentioned Magnus Norman at the outset of this edition of the show, a man that we spoke to earlier on in the year about how you beat Novak Djokovic in a Grand Slam tournament. It's happened so rarely, but there last year, when Djokovic was on the brink of greatness, he's already great, isn't he? But immortality, really, of completing that career slam and winning the French Open last year. Out came Stan Wawrinka to produce the most pitch-perfect display of tennis, power-hitting, that you've ever seen in your life. And he knocked Djokovic off the court. He was powerless, was Djokovic, that day. And I wanted to know from Magnus Norman how you do it.
Well, he played aggressive. He came out with a very clear strategy in Paris in the final, to be very aggressive on the serve, on the returns, especially on the second serve of Novak. You have to risk it a little bit, I think. You got to find this thin line between not overplaying and being aggressive and try to find this good balance.
So there's Magnus Norman talking to us here, and we only have one more thing to say. The French Open is around the corner. It starts on Sunday. You'll be able to follow it throughout the fortnight. And Catherine and I will be bringing you tennis podcasts when we can. We're not exactly sure when, we'll have to see. But it will be in association with The Telegraph. We'll be trying to hear from Simon Briggs, The Telegraph's tennis correspondent, over the course of the fortnight as well. Do check out The Telegraph website, because there's so much to follow there with the great articles of Simon and Charlie Eccleshare as well. There's been some really good ones. One was that I read earlier on today was why it is impossible to not love Andy Murray, and it's well worth a read, that one. Do stick with us as well. We're going to be bringing you tennis podcasts whenever we can, and do enjoy the French Open.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.